This episode contains content that may be alarming to some listeners. Please check the show notes for more information.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to another episode of Dark Rhino Security, Security Confidential. Today, we are honored to have Dan Walkler join us. Dan is a serial entrepreneur. He's the CEO of Darklight Inc., and we'll hear much more about that a little bit later. But as an accomplished entrepreneur with over 20 years of experience, he served in both executive and sales leadership roles, basically everything that makes a company work. He was the president of Route 9B Holdings, which was a NASDAQ publicly traded advanced cybersecurity firm. He's done multiple capital raises and managed large corporate realignment efforts and international expansion efforts. He makes the companies work in the world of cybersecurity. Thank you so much, Dan, for joining us.
Thank you, Manoj. Appreciate that.
You know, you got a heck of a accomplishment list there. So we want to hear your story. How did you become an entrepreneur? It's a, or how did this happen?
Luck, to be honest, I won't bore the audience with too much history, but it was summer school Spanish class in college. I had thought I wanted to own my own business. In Spanish class, I met someone who was about 60, still my mentor, and he owned his own business, but the way he operated, you would assume it was a very small business, and he was so low key. And I asked him to go to dinner, took him to dinner with he and his wife. And it turned out that he and his family owned a company that had 30,000 employees. And I was so blown away with how someone with such financial success could be approachable, not arrogant, giving, that I wanted to work for him. And he happily for me brought me into his company. 50-year family company. They sold that, spun a piece out. I ended up buying that from them, really taking a business that was needed to be turned around, and took that over. And that's kind of where my journey started in building and operating businesses.
Wow. What type of a business was that, Dan?
So the original business was a security guard business. So security officers, literally people in uniforms at malls, at banks, what have you. The division we spun out that I ended up purchasing focused on higher level executive protection, robbery suppression, kidnap and ransom, sort of some heavy duty stuff. When I bought it, that sounded pretty cool until one of our folks actually killed somebody. And then it's not as sexy when that kind of real life scenario hits you when you have an economics degree from the University of Arizona and not from that law enforcement intelligence community world. So we began, I quickly moved the business to focus on anti-money laundering and counter-terrorist finance investigation, but being right place, right time for what the industry needed, our business provided.
Wow. That's, there's so many questions I could ask you about that, but I think we might run out of time there a little bit.
Yes.
And, you know, we have a lot of folks who are very young listeners, and you know, in their mind, they're like, "Well, I want to be a pen tester, and I'm gonna do my own thing, or I'm going to, you know, be an ethical hacker of some kind, and I'll be a consultant, a securities consultant." They want to start their own business. What do you see as repeating patterns from your own experiences as an entrepreneur that keep coming up that you have to watch out for if you want success in your sights?
Well, to me, the first answer or first question that should be answered for yourself certainly was in my case, which I didn't do a good job early in my career, was what is success to you? You know, when you talk about financial success, to what degree versus life balance, you know, those are really heavy and important questions to think about before you make your decisions on, in my opinion. And on the flip side, however, being an entrepreneur and loving people that have the willingness to take the jump, take the risk, if you have an itch to be an entrepreneur, go do it, especially if you're young, because you've got lots of time to make up for things. But if you have that itch and don't scratch it, you'll always wonder. And some people love it, the independence, the wondering if you're going to make payroll for yourself, let alone if you have employees. Those sorts of goods and bads, people are either going to love it or they're going to hate it. But if you don't try it, you'll never know. And then you get to be, say, my age, 53, and it gets way harder. Kids, college, blah, blah, blah. It gets way harder to take that risk. So if you feel like you want to do it, just do it. But I think I probably would have set some more guidelines on what success is to me. Between that financial success and life balance success.
How much of the entrepreneurship game, in your opinion, is mental versus the actual work of whatever business you're doing?
Oh, boy. My instant reaction was to 80%, because the grit, the resiliency, the ability to just take rejection, to be depressed, but yet keep going after it with a smile. Maybe that's insanity. I'm not sure. I hope my wife doesn't think so. But I think there's a huge amount that's mental, and just the ability to be naturally resourceful and resilient. You just got to have those traits, in my humble opinion.
Yeah, Dan, I would just counter with, and this is, I've done five companies. This is my fifth one. I'd say it's 90%. I think that mental toughness, I can never tell you what today will bring. I don't know. I have never not been surprised. So to me, it's, If you have to have that, what everything you said, I just up it a little bit from 80 to 90%. And then the rest of the things, you know, surprisingly, you'll sort out. And there will always be challenges with whether you're making payroll or contracts or delivery or whatever the case may be. But you can get through that if your mind can be stable enough to navigate those waters. And that's... But I'd rather have the audience hear it from someone with your success than with someone like me. So I appreciate it.
Well, that's very generous. You've done five of these, so you're at least as experienced as me. So
this is another one. This is not a question I got on one of our channels, but I've gotten this at many of the events that I've attended. And that is in the startup game, and you've done several product companies. When you have no clients, no references, nothing behind you other than you built a product and a name, how do you sell that? How do you get early adopters? What's the secret?
Ask for help. You know, hopefully, again, doing... My situation with Darklight was very, very different than my situation with IPSA or others.
Absolutely.
Because of my age. So IPSA, I was 33. I got involved and took over Darklight at 48. I had a pretty good network that allowed me to, you know, make phone calls that people would know who I was. And that helped with some credibility. Has not been easy. We are still absolutely struggling. We've pivoted from DOD government work using the tech in a different way than we do now for cyber. But for those that are doing this, younger folks that may not have the network, don't be afraid to ask for help. Because if you truly care about your product, about the industry, and about helping solve a problem, there are so many great folks out there, especially in cyber. One of the reasons I love this industry is, and same with anti-money laundering, counter-terrorist finance stuff, we have a bigger problem we're trying to solve than just worry about investors, which we have to do, have to put food on the table. but we're trying to solve a bigger problem. And you'll find a lot of mentorship and people willing to mentor you in cyber. And you use that by simply asking for help. I have an idea. I know you're busy, but can you just take a look at this and tell me what you think in 15 minutes, half an hour? And then you start to learn. And then people go, wow, this is cool. I want to be an early adopter. And you just grind it out.
What a novel concept. That is, that's so very true. You know, ask for the help. And I think that's the biggest thing, right? And I'd say, don't be in love with your own, ideations all the time. Be willing to accept some guidance. If people are telling you something, they're not, doing that out of malice or because they're jealous or anything. They might, they're, like you said, there's a lot of mentors in our industry and they're doing that in the best interest most of the time.
Well, Manoj, that to me is one of the, especially when I've come to this industry and really product only, which I haven't done. Different businesses had a mix of services and product, but this is a 12 person company where the only thing we're selling is a product. So this one is slightly different for me. But that ability to balance, to hear that, you know, your baby's ugly and not get offended and actually listen. But also, if you're doing something truly unique and different that maybe people aren't understanding, straddling that ability to listen without being arrogant or ignoring, with also not being deterred on what you believe is right, man, that's the secret sauce. And I'm still trying to figure that out. Maybe you figured it out, but that balance is really, that's the $1 million quality right there.
Yeah. But you're 1,000,000,000% spot on. If there's such a, I can't agree with that more. You nailed it. I have nothing more than to say other than people, you might want to go back 10 seconds and re-listen to what Dan just said. If you're thinking about getting into this, because it is absolutely critical. To your success. And, you know, now that you're doing it in a product only company, how do you really differentiate? I mean, and I ask that because cybersecurity seems like there's a ton of products out there, Dan, a lot of products. Is there room for one more, or how do you make your blue ocean happen?
Mm-hmm. Manoj, I've read all the books when I came here because I thought I was sort of done reading all the latest craze books when I was in my 30s and figured now I'm an experienced executive. I don't have to read all that stuff. Clearly, I've done that here because I was getting my backside handed to me quite a bit early on in this. And let me answer it by saying what we're in the middle of doing as opposed to giving advice to anybody else because we haven't figured it out. Please. I just got done with Black Hat last week, as we mentioned in our sort of preamble. I walked the floor. I've known this before. We do a very active review and different products that we think might be competitive or even budgetary competitive, you know, but competition for budget dollars. And we're reading all the messaging. And I'm supposed to be a sales guy. And communicating in a simple way is really important. But when you break down the solutions that are the problems that we're trying to solve and the how to solve it, it is so much noise out there. It's very hard to differentiate, I think, from a surface level. So this piece we're going to now is literally back to the old school way of we're going to grind it out with service and proof, even though we're a product company. It will probably reduce how fast our hockey stick may be. Knock on wood, we have one. But the idea is making sure we don't overpromise, we don't BS the market, and then good old-fashioned word of mouth until we have a fundamentally sound product that's proven with a large set of references. Then we'll put the gas on it from a marketing perspective because we can use some of the same words. But we'll have the proof to back it, which that begins, from my perspective, to be the differentiator in cyber. Do you truly deliver what you've promised? Because just the explaining your differentiator without getting way into the science and the tech, which can bore people to death.
Oh my God. Yeah.
I haven't figured it out yet. So may not be a great answer, but it's our reality right now.
No, it's a very practical answer, and it's real. I think the model and the approach is very well proven. I mean, for what you're trying to do, there's been umpteen companies out there that proved out a services portion that productized it and have been immensely successful. So,
I agree. And when you start to look at a pattern that we've seen, I mean, we're reducing our next raise based on the pattern that to me is so clear, which is you have a really good idea, you've got great early adopters, and then you're, whatever that book is, crossing the chasm. You know, you're trying to switch from truly the early adopters who want to experiment with new products to the ones that don't want any experimentation. Kind of like me, I'm always two iPhones behind. I want to make sure they get their stuff worked out. And so to cross that chasm, you take a lot of money and then throw marketing dollars at it. And you may or may not be ready for the scale. And you may not be delivering on the promises that the new marketing folks are putting out there. And so making sure we have that foundation right to build the credibility, because these CISOs talk to each other. This market shares everything. And I do believe good old fashioned, deliver what you promise, stand up for the responsibility, and then don't overdo it sales marketing wise. You can have a very large successful business if your product works. Let's be real.
So let's talk about that. What does Darklight do?
We help companies identify and prioritize their risk in cyber so that they can quickly utilize limited resources to fix the things that should be fixed first.
How do you guys stack against Risk Lens, you know,
good question. This is a great challenge in the marketing arena. So what we're doing is focusing on evidence-based risk as much as possible. So we'll ingest vulnerability scan information as an example. Okay. So a scanner is actually looking at endpoints, your environment, and giving you what are known vulnerabilities. And then the company or service providers like yourselves have to go fix this or tell them what to do next. The Risk Lens is doing, you know, there's a lot of interview component to that. There's not the evidence based fully on ingesting the scanners. Where we're going is fusing a lot of different data sources and feeds to give a more complete and automated picture of where your risk is, and not only what it is, but how to fix it.
So if you could walk us through the process, you're first going to scan the entire environment for any open vulnerabilities, whatever they might be. That might be software missing patches. It could be open ports. It could be whatever, umpteen
configuration, CVEs.
Yeah.
Correct. And that, a key piece to us, for better or for worse, which we're learning as we're going into the market, we want to be scanner agnostic. So while we have a, quote, partnership with Tenable, you know, it's like an MSSP partnership. Anybody can really get it to some degree. Right. But we support Rapid7 as well. And so the client or the MSSP will run the scan, bring that into our environment. And what we can show in our pilots or our proof of concepts very quickly in 15 minutes, look at what the tools that are doing the scans are telling you should fix first versus what Darklight's SIO tells you to fix first. And right away, you'll see a difference. And that's because we're bringing in other pieces of information. So updated NVD, National Vulnerability Database, and CVSS scoring, not just the base, but the more advanced scoring. I won't get too technical here, but there's a lot of other, as you know, Manoj, there's a lot of other ways to measure risk. And this is something that we're dealing with, is risk is actually likelihood plus impact. Likelihood is somewhat easier to understand based on publicly available information. impact is only maybe even whatever percentage, but less percent that you can get that from public. You have to understand your own environment to get the impact part. So we're giving you a mechanism to quickly, truly measure risk based on likelihood and impact.
Okay. And in the end, is your report putting out dollars and cents? It's saying this is the likelihood of loss versus the magnitude?
We haven't done that yet. We've looked at the FAIR model. You've probably heard of that. Audience may or may not
know
have
it well. Yeah.
Yeah.
By the way, Riskline sold for a big chunk of money recently. Yes. So that
you know, the I believe that those are good and bad, because it's good because it can sort of speak in terms of, oh my gosh, that's $1 million loss versus $100 loss potential. There's so much subjectivity in there versus objectivity in trying to, you know, measure those things. I think it can sometimes distract and be the focus versus speaking in even more real terms, which is what our capability allows. Hey, this risk could take down your payroll system. So we can speak in terms that a small, medium business person, especially, they don't need to understand or even hear of FAIR. They don't need to, you know, thinking about $1 million issue versus $100 issue is no, this risk could take down your e-commerce site, which is an information system based on the NIST guideline. There's a definition for that. We're operationalizing those definitions so we can speak in true business terms to the end user, instead of overwhelming them with, hey, this is a CBSS 9.8 and EPSS score of X and blah, blah, blah. And they're like, what are you talking about? So we try to simplify that.
What you just said is what most CISOs or cybersecurity teams go to the board with when they're trying to get money. And it's like deer in the headlights versus you're going to need to fix your HR vulnerability or your supply chain. We have this problem and we need $300,000 to fix it. So you make the call. Do you think it's worth $300,000 or not?
Yes, you've answered it. And even in the SMB world where there isn't a CISO and sometimes, you know, they're talking to the CEO, like my wife's an interior designer, good sized firm.
Yeah.
No offense to my lovely wife, but you just better tell her, hey, this is going to take down. If this happens, your computer hasn't been updated the X amount of time, you need to get a new one. And if you don't, here's your risk that your entire AutoCAD system will go down, which means productivity stops in that instant. Oh, now I get it.
How does your system differentiate between industries? So what I mean by that is, what may be a vulnerability that is critical in one industry because of the bad actors operating in that sector may not really be a vulnerability. It may exist in another sector, but it's often not exploited in that sector. And something else is that is of a higher priority. So how do you account for that? Or how do you account for MITRE ATT&CK in this as well? So
MITRE ATT&CK. Well, let me answer your first question first.
Yeah.
So today I would say we don't really. The mechanism is there, but because of our limited pilot usage and sort of where we're targeting go to market, we don't have to. But what we have already pre-built in the system is something we call vignettes.
Okay.
And so the vignette that you would choose is basically a slight, you know, to make it simple, weighting of different types based on your industry. So if there's a financial industry vignette, there's an e-commerce industry vignette, there's a manufacturing industry vignette. And those vignettes sort of, you know, dial the formulas a bit. Where we're struggling with that, again, one of our core values is transparency. So while this is true that we've thought of and have built in the vignettes, we're not really using them because one of the things that we're believers in is industry standards so that it's easier to share information between companies, even competitive companies, so that, you know, you're speaking as close to apples and apples as you can. And the more people create their own formulas and say this rating system's better than this, and there's one rating system for every single product, is tricky, because how does that translate when you're sharing for the industry that this threat, this new threat or this new adversary playbook could hurt blah, 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 and you have your own scoring system? It's really hard. So we're working through that now. We haven't had to fully address it because we can, you know, we're still go to market with, you know, 5 pilot users at the moment. But that's how we thought of it when we came to market, is the vignette to just slightly alter based on industry.
That's great. We had a guest on a couple weeks ago, and he made a very interesting suggestion. And that was, he said, you know, go back to MITRE ATT&CK. And what he meant by that was, if you're going to build a defensive posture, look at your sector, look at who is really the bad actor in that sector, right? And then determine what TTPs they use. And I think most people will know that's tactic, techniques, and procedures, what they use. And as priority one, close those gaps, because you've got a target on your sector, right? And that way you get something very focused for the business that you have. And I thought that was an interesting observation.
I couldn't agree more with him. And in the context of the small, medium business, or even the use of vignette, to me, the way to solve, or to, I should say, implement that person's suggestion is through maybe firms like yours or the MSSP that can go to their client and say, look, we're assessing your risk. So take likelihood. You know, if risk is likelihood times impact, we know that this particular CVE is now actively being used by PETA, or, you know, whatever environmentalist type groups, and you are in that industry, your likelihood for that particular went way up versus what, you know, the Humane Society or whatever, right, something that's not.
Right.
That's where the consultants come in to actually help do that. But we also realize, I think all of us do, we have to have as much automation as possible if we can trust the automation, because of the speeds and the amount of data we're dealing with. And so I completely agree with that person and what we're trying to do. And I think, you know, we're going to talk about operationalizing these frameworks.
Yes.
And what that actually means is, it's going to be very key for us in the industry if we're going to have a shot.
And that's the crux of the problem, is operationalizing them. And I'll say the second part to that is that risk in our industry has become a four-letter word to some degree, in that everyone and their friends talk about it, right? I think there were 1,500 MSP, MSSP firms in North America 2 years ago. If they're in security, they will always talk about risk. It's on their website. They always talk about it. But what the heck? How do I operationalize that, right? That is the, how do I turn that into practical actions that will make a material difference for my business?
Our mission statement is basically, you know, instead of being an overwhelmed victim, become an empowered defender. And I want to focus on that word overwhelm for a second.
Please.
I'm overwhelmed, and I study this stuff every single day and have for the last 6 years. And 6 years is, I'm a lightweight in this industry for about 6 years, but it's overwhelming. So that's the first thing we, and I think the industry can do a better job, is sometimes we use fear to sell, and sometimes overwhelming people can increase the fear. But I think we've gone too far, because there is some fear. You should be concerned that you could have these things happen, and without some block and tackle stuff, it will happen. But let's not overwhelm folks. Let's calm it down a little bit and be practical. If you're a business owner, and I'm not a cyber professional, and someone comes and starts to overwhelm you, just like, I don't even know where to start. Well, let's start with the basics. Let's understand who you're serving. So get the industry situation. Let's understand what could be catastrophic to your business. AutoCAD not working. My wife's business is dead for that period of time and she's an hourly-based business, blah, blah, blah. So understand basics from a business perspective. And then the cyber professional's job is to take the business context and reverse engineer what are the most likely scenarios that could occur that we know about. And let's start to solve for those things one step at a time. One step at a time. With 200,000 vulnerabilities in the National Vulnerability Database.
Oh, yeah.
Give me a break. So operationalizing risk is twofold. First, let's make it more reasonable by reducing the noise and not overwhelming folks. And then let's also, for those truly in the depths of what we're doing, you and us and lots of others, use technology within reason, understanding it isn't a silver bullet and you need people reduce risk dramatically in terms that the client can understand without being overwhelmed.
Does AI have a role in this?
No question. There's no question. You know, boy, what it is obviously the world changed December 1st last year. I mean, I cannot believe it hasn't even been a year since ChatGPT came out. I can't Right. believe what's occurred. I mean, take our industry, and I won't get too into the weeds of the tech, but we're using what's called a semantic knowledge graph. And the technology, the thought behind it came out of a national lab, Department of Energy National Lab, east of Seattle here. And the way you can make knowledge graphs really sing is using something called ontologies, which is basically coding that replaces the old if-then statements. So okay. The old days would be, you know, if this occurs, do this. That's a very brittle process at scale in cyber. Ontologies allow you to do things. You know, the ontologies are really about operationalizing tradecraft. So you take the MITRE ATT&CK TTPs, you build ontologies around that. It can review data using this knowledge graph, and you get a tremendous amount of automation. I know I went down a rabbit hole.
No,
here,
this is great. There's going to be a lot of people that are going to love this. Please.
That is a real differentiator. And if you think about fusing the different types of data sources and feeds and information, best practices that are available in cyber, if you're not using a knowledge graph and probably a semantic knowledge graph, you are limited. And I'm not the techie person of most of our team for sure, but there's no question the majority of the products out there are built on a relational database, or even a lot are getting into graph, but it doesn't quite allow you to fuse everything in a way to use automation and AI for that matter, to the best of its ability. Now, I share all that because large language models may make it way easier to build ontologies. So for example, one of our challenges to move fast is there's very few people literally very few people in the world that are great at writing ontologies. It's an art form in and of itself. Combining that skill set with cyber expertise that you need to actually know what to write, it's so finite, that's a big challenge. Large language models, you take the cyber expert and use the large language model specifically for ontology development, and we can move way faster as an industry. So it's completely changed how we're looking at this stuff. And that's only in what Darklight sort of focuses on. When you think of incident response, you think of other things and all the tools they're already throwing in, you know, their version of ChatGPT or plugging into Bard or whatever they're doing.
Yeah.
I worry about how fast it's going, which is a little bit weird because I've personally had hallucinations help or seen in ChatGPT and Bard with something I thought was pretty benign, but there's no question. And we have to use it. The speed in which things are changing and happening, we have to understand it. We just have to do it responsibly. Excuse my soapbox there, Manoj.
No, that was perfect. I think responsibly is the key word here, right? So verifying those models are in fact correct and they're being updated in a correct manner, and that You know, just as easy as it is for the good guys to use these models, it's as easy for the bad guys to use these models, right? So the thing with the robot.
You mentioned blockchain earlier, by the way.
Yeah.
You know, I think we think blockchain could be a really good way to, you know, legitimize, am I using the latest model that I'm supposed to be using? You know, because there's some pieces in there on how the latest software gets delivered or even from SBOM or supply chain, you know, stuff. I think there's some real use case for blockchain to have the integrity. Am I using the software I thought I was using? Whether that's a model or an ontology or open source, whatever. Anyway, different topic, but that's part of the responsibility piece that has to be worked out.
Yeah, absolutely. One thing is for sure that it's the speed, and I think you mentioned it, the speed at which things are changing and the way these vulnerabilities are going to get exploited, I think are going to ever increase. I mean, you look at dwell times now, right? I mean, we were 200 plus days a couple of years ago, right? It's sub 90 days right now, and the ransomware deployers are trying to act in sub 90 minute increments.
Right.
At this
point. The speed is unbelievable.
Right. So do you folks at Darklight have if people want to learn more about the tech and whatnot, is there a way, how do they get in touch? How do they learn more? How do they get a demo, or what would you suggest?
Well, obviously, thank you for that. You just go to darklight.ai. There's a button there for pilot. If you're sharing my email address, I mean, we are a 12-person startup company. We're very focused on getting our first 10 clients. We don't even have our first 10 clients yet. We have some very big brands that I can't share, but I will say Fortune 50 too, that are design partners because they're interested in what we're building based on those fancy tech terms I hope I said correctly earlier. But right now we're looking for a cross-section of small MSP, good-size MSP, small MSSP, good-size MSSP, and maybe one or two direct clients for our first 10 to really prove out, you know, product market fit, kind of vote on our roadmap decisions. So we're going to be limited to those first 10, but darklight.ai, and I'll talk to anybody, get their opinion. Like I mentioned earlier, we need all the help we can get. We'll show you a 15-20 minute demo. Give us your opinion. If you think our baby's ugly, I won't be offended. I've had worse things happen to me. Darklight.ai anytime.
While you're at it, go ahead and plug anything else you would like to do, Dan. You have the floor. What else is going
on? I will say one thing. What I am hoping for from the industry, and I have an article coming out about this soon about threat intelligence and sharing. One of the things I think we in the industry have to be careful of is creating individual solutions so that we can differentiate at the expense of the greater good. So if I can share my individual score and say it's proprietary and speak a different language, instead of using APT1, use some randomly created, you know, name for an APT that allows you to market that you're the only one that has this information. That's good for marketing in the short run. It is not good for the industry. So I'm hoping, and there's mostly incredible people in this industry, but we really need to work together and following standards whenever possible. It's not always possible. Please do.
That's really good advice. I think, I'd be curious. I would love to have a VC on the show and ask them what their thoughts are, because they're all about differentiation, right? And how do I get my money back? So
they are, no offense to them, because I'll be pitching them. They are part of the problem. The reason that we have 71 tools on average is because what the VC community generally wants, not all of them, there are some great ones out there, especially the cyber focused ones, but they want you to give a very specific problem and solve for that very specific problem with a solution that solves that problem. Cyber doesn't work like that. that's why we have so many silos of information, that when you talked about some things that your firm does and this need that buying widgets A, B through F without an integration, part of the reason that we have those many silos is because we don't have a lot of creative and visionary VCs that realize this isn't a one silo, you know, problem versus solution issue.
I think you're absolutely right. And I think the insurance marketplace is going to be the one to drive the change. Watch what happens here. That's my personal prediction as of August 14, 2023. But I think they will be the ones that are going to money talks. It always has. And
no question.
Right.
No. And I actually agree with you, Manoj. And you know, there needs to be some, unfortunately, some lawsuits that flow through to understand really where does liability sit? How do you insure? How do you even, but I agree, it will be the insurance companies that force this issue.
They will. And risk is foundational to them. So I wouldn't be surprised if you guys become part of a very large insurance organization in the not too distant future. As we have seen, every insurance carrier in this past year has their own scan tools.
Yeah.
To issue a cyber liability policy. And none of them are very good. I'm just going to say it. They kind of suck. But, you know, they invented them. I think maybe one or two were sourced from a real cybersecurity company. Yep. But a lot of them.
I believe so, too. Yep.
Yeah. Most of them are in-house. And they don't know what to look for. They're not going through the process that you described, Dan. And that's what they need to be doing if you're going to assess the risk on a client.
I agree. We've had a couple MSPs that wanted us to integrate their scanner. And it's not that big of a deal to set up an integration. But when we did the homework on some of these scanners, and one of them was really built to be a reseller for cyber insurance, I had to go back and say, you know, we can't support that, because one of the tenets that I believe in, and I think I can say we believe in, it's better to know you don't have good security than to have a false sense of security. And some of those tools are giving results that do not paint a real picture. So we just won't support those.
I'm going to stop on that note, because I wish you would have said that at the beginning. That is worth the price of admission. I hope people listen to that. Very wise words there. Dan, thank you so much for being on the show. We deeply appreciate your time and your knowledge. And best of luck to you.
Thank you. And thank you for having me. I'm very happy that Dark Rhino is doing this for the industry. And I wish you and your firm well. And I look forward to getting to know you and staying in touch.
Absolutely. You're welcome anytime. Mm-hmm.